I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. As expected, President Trump made school choice a part of his State of the Union address on Tuesday night by presenting a scholarship to Janiyah Davis, a fourth grader from Philadelphia on the waiting list for a school choice scholarship.
The next step forward in building an inclusive society is making sure that every young American gets a great education and the opportunity to achieve the American dream. Yet for too long, countless American children have been trapped in failing government schools. To rescue these students, 18 states have created school choice in the form of opportunity scholarships. The programs are so popular that tens of thousands of students remain on a waiting list. One of those students is Janiyah Davis, a fourth grader from Philadelphia. Janiyah.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos has been a longtime proponent of school choice and has promoted a federal program called the Education Freedom Scholarship and Opportunity Act, which Trump wants funded at something like $5 billion a year. It would give tax credits to businesses and individuals who donate to scholarship organizations that in turn provide vouchers to students to cover the cost of private and parochial schools. Pennsylvania does have its own programs, the Education Improvement Tax Credit and the Opportunity Scholarship tax credit to fund scholarships at private schools. Currently, something like 50,000 students receive one of those scholarships. Philadelphia has been at the forefront of the charter school expansion, with something like 70,000 students attending charter schools, although it should be said nationwide, 90% of students attend public schools. Well, today on Radio Times, the debate over school choice and what it means for public education in Pennsylvania and, frankly, beyond. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. In fact, we had this discussion a couple of years ago. We're happy to have both of them back. Mark Gleason is executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership that invests in expanding good schools, including charter schools. And Mark, nice to have you with us on Radio Times once again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us, Donna Cooper, executive director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. That's a child advocacy organization based here in Philadelphia. Donna, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, let's begin with Janiyah Davis. As it turns out, Betsy DeVos is going to pay for her scholarship. She's an adorable-looking little girl. As I looked at her and her mom, I thought, well, who wouldn't want her to have the education of her choice? Nonetheless, there are lots of other little girls and boys like Janiyah, and I just would like to get your response, Donna Cooper, to what the president did on his State of the Union.
Well, what's really disappointing is that the federal government's role in education has been to supplement state funds for high-poverty schools. And the federal program that does that is called Title I. And Donald Trump had a choice. He could have proposed an increase in Title I funding that would have given thousands of people, children like Janiyah Davis, greater opportunity in schools in Philadelphia and Norristown and William Penn and Upper Darby. But instead, he decided, let's focus on a very small pocket of money that would be available to avoid business taxes as a way to offer an opportunity out for a very limited number of children. And you know, on some level, it's the way you do it on the cheap. One, it's a tax break, so there's no appropriation. Nobody has to argue about spending. And the second is it cherry picks who benefits. And it, you know, it just doesn't create the kind of civic infrastructure that our schools are intended to do. And it doesn't live up to the federal role of what we need for our schools.
Mark, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that. And I should add that the president also criticized Governor Wolf. And if you weren't paying attention, it made it sound like Governor Wolf was stopping programs here in Pennsylvania. That is not true. He just wasn't increasing them as much as Mike Terzai wanted these programs to be increased. But they do exist in Pennsylvania.
That's right. And as I understand it, we're one of 18 states that have some kind of program. The tax credit programs here have increased quite a bit in the last 5 or 6 years, which has coincided with the Wolf administration. It's about 10% of the students in Pennsylvania attend private schools, and another 8% or so attend charter schools. So if you add that together, a little bit under 20%. And the scholarships that you mentioned, as you said, are about 50,000 students. So that's a much maybe a third of the private school students are actually getting a scholarship of one kind or another here in Pennsylvania.
One of the reasons that Wolf was opposed to what Mike Terzai wanted to do was he felt as if the reason for these programs is to help poor students and to be able to give them some kind of opportunity. And it looks as if this program has kind of expanded and migrated into the middle class, maybe even upper middle class, and maybe even beyond. Can you weigh in on that, Mark?
Well, I think that gets to the root of the issue. We debate school choice as if it's an either-or conversation, but school choice has a long history in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania. Going back 50, 60 years, 30% of the students in Philadelphia were in parochial schools, many of which were free at the time to those families. So the concept of school choice is not new. The challenge here is that in any system where you have choices, the families with the most means and privilege are going to figure out and have access to the best of those. So in Philadelphia, 65% of all students, and there are 240,000 students here, K to 12, are in a school of choice. There are lots of different kinds of school of choice, magnets, charters, privates, but they're in one of those. And if you look at the achievement levels of these schools, the best schools in all of the sectors are overwhelmingly going to white, are enrolled by white and affluent students. And so the challenge here is how do you create more equity to the good choices that exist, and how do you expand the number of good choices so that more students can access them? And the tax credit programs are intended to do that, but as you point out, they also benefit a pretty good slice of middle-class families as well.
I mean, it raises so many questions, Donna, but has scholarship become the new word for voucher?
Oh, absolutely. And in the expansion that the governor vetoed, a family that had a child, maybe with a speech and language delay, pretty minor, let's say they have any IEP, could earn up to $270,000 and have their kid get a scholarship. So the press understood this as a scholarship available to families earning about $100,000. It's more than $95,000 because of the way the law is written. But the fact is that there is no transparency in this program. We have no idea whether children of middle class or poor families are attending these schools.
Because of the way it's structured, because the money, the money goes to an organization that helps to find or create vouchers for students.
Right. And the speaker himself has blocked any effort for reporting. So there is no reporting. The schools report to the Department of Community Economic Development that they receive the vouchers, and they have sort of obtuse reporting about the income levels of the kids in their schools. But those two things that, never the twain shall meet on who is benefiting from these scholarships. And then since the income level is so high, look, Mike Terzai wanted to put $100 million more into the scholarship program. That's the equivalent to what Tom Wolf proposed on Tuesday as the increase for every public school in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. That was not a small amount of money to expand opportunity for middle class or poor families to go to private schools. But 1.7 million children attend our public schools. So, we're sort of in a tyranny of the minority here, where we're talking about how do we drive more money for a smaller group of people to have choice rather than improving the quality of education for every child.
But do you think, Mark, even coming from the Trump administration and some of the things that Betsy DeVos has said about public education, which is a dead end, the president talked about failing government schools. Are they trying to dismantle the public school system from your perspective?
I wouldn't go that
far. Or certainly denigrate it.
I wouldn't go that far, no. My organization's focused on Philadelphia, so and most of the money in education is coming from local and state taxpayers. So to some extent, I think this national conversation is a little bit of a distraction. I would agree with Donna. Title I is a fundamental program to schools all across the country.
And for poor schools,
the advantage of funding Title I is that it benefits all public school students, whether they be in a charter school or a district school, as long as they qualify, under the income limits. Dismantling public education? No. As you pointed out, 90% of the students are still in the traditional public education system nationwide. What this is about the families in places like North Philadelphia and West Philadelphia, who their school is struggling. It is not producing students who are high school ready or college ready. And if they want more for their son or daughter, they're going to try to make a rational choice to get that son or daughter into a place, a school that they think is going to give them a chance. And OSTC, the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit Program, is very focused on that, because to qualify for those scholarships, you have to live in a zone where a school is in the bottom 15% on achievement statewide. Unfortunately, that program has been flat at $25 million for a number of years now. All of the increases of the past several years have gone into the EITC program, which has a much higher income limit.
Well, that's an interesting sidebar there. But I wonder to you, Donna, and thinking of Janai and thinking of parents across this Commonwealth and, frankly, across the country, they want the best education for their children. Their neighborhood school does not meet those standards, whatever their standards that they have for their children. What is a parent to do?
Well, I think, first of all, I challenge that notion. You know, if you live in Lower Merion, your neighborhood school's doing just fine. And if you live in Abington, your neighborhood school's doing just fine. And yet people are attempting to open charters in those communities and drain resources from incredibly effective school districts. So one has to question the entire notion of what's going on here and what's driving it and what the interests are behind it. In Philadelphia, I live in Fishtown. Mm-hmm. My neighborhood school's doing just fine. So there's
there are schools
I will get to
Philly.
That. But okay. I have a charter school in my neighborhood whose parents choose it because they hear the rhetoric. And 6 months later are enrolling mid-year in my neighborhood elementary school, leaving their charter, because in Philadelphia, tragically, our charters are not outperforming our school district in spite of the rhetoric. So, and the reason for that is that the charters in Philadelphia and the public schools in Philadelphia suffer the same problem. They do not have enough revenue to support a quality education. They have half the revenue that a family in Lower Merion has per student in that school district to educate children. So we are arguing over the wrong question. Should we have charters? Should we not? Until we can know whether this experiment works because we fund our schools adequately, we're really having the wrong conversation.
But we have been funding schools this way for generations.
Oh, not
now.
Really, no. In, up through 91, Marty, Philadelphia schools were not in this kind of situation. So in 91, when the state radically changed how it funded schools, Philadelphia began to tank, and the trajectory went down. But we are in a radically different situation now than we were in 91.
We're almost up on a break here, Mark, but it looks like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to challenge that statement about adequate funding. In 1970, Philadelphia School District had 300,000 students, and in inflation-adjusted dollars, so 2020 dollars, they spent about $6,500 per student. Today, there are 130,000 students in the school district, and they spend $15,000 per pupil. So more than double the amount of money per student, a lot fewer students, and yet the system can't even keep up with itself. The building, we've got all these schools that are closed because they've been neglected for years. Where has the money been going? That's what the families are asking. Families did not wake up and decide, I need a charter school. They're in a charter school because the school that they were assigned isn't meeting their needs.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Mark Gleason. He's executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Also with us, Donna Cooper, executive director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. We're talking about school choice, the controversy around school choice. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. President Trump made school choice a part of his State of the Union address, announcing a scholarship for a fourth grader who lives here in Philadelphia. Today on Radio Times, we're talking about the battle over school choice, including things like scholarships and vouchers and charters, and what this could mean for Pennsylvania schools and for schools across the country. Again, our guests are Mark Gleason and Donna Cooper. I don't want to get too bogged down in money, but I know that money is sort of at the root of so much having to do with education. But Donna, can you respond to what Mark was saying, which is, you know, years ago, we were able to educate children for a lot less.
Sure. In 1970, a gallon of milk cost about $1.15, and today it costs $3.22. So the cost of milk has gone up three times in that same period. So the price of education going up in that period is expected. It's called nominal inflation. That's not a surprise. Not only that, another radical transformation in our schools is that, you know, in the old days when you could just rely on smart women to be teachers and they could reject jobs and other, they were rejected from jobs in other parts of the economy, we didn't have to pay as much for teachers. But as women have had opportunity, which I think Mark would agree is a good thing, the cost of hiring teachers has gone up. Not enough, in my estimation. Other countries that have much higher performance pay their teachers much more and recruit the best and the brightest, and we still don't do that. So, you know, the fundamentals of are we spending more now than 1970 is sort of a given and not persuasive in my mind at all. The question is, the other thing that's happened is we're educating more poor students whose parents had themselves had failed in education in the educational system. They are more expensive to educate. Philadelphia's a poorer town than it was in 1970. And so is Upper Darby, and so is Norristown, and so is Bristol Barrow. And so the level of input that's needed to get high academic outcomes is more expensive. Now, we could not do it and hope our democracy survives and hope our economy grows, but that's just ludicrous. It's not going to happen unless we change. And tinkering with the governance structure of schools is a distraction from the fundamental challenge that charters and publics face in terms of attracting qualified staff, qualified principals and superintendents, and the resources to educate kids. Mark, I don't think there's a charter in this town that would say they're getting reimbursed enough to educate their children.
You agree with that, Mark?
I would agree with that. But I would also say, first of all, it's well documented that the cost of education in this country has risen at a higher rate in the last 50 years than the price of milk or most other consumer goods. Teachers have not benefited from that because we've chosen as a system to pay for everything, to expand spending on everything else. Consultants, other types of jobs, and pensions, healthcare benefits. The one thing we haven't put the money into is teacher salaries. So they have been relatively flat, which is really unfortunate for teachers. But again, I think I would go back to this. Charters only exist because the choices we're making with the money that's available in public schools is not aligning with what the families want. If families were satisfied with what was being offered in the neighborhood schools, they would be choosing those and charters wouldn't exist. The other piece that's really important here is that charters, when they fail, when they do not provide results, they go out of business. They can be shut down by their authorizer, and more than a dozen have been in this city in the last 6 or 7 years, and or families stop choosing them and they lose enrollment and then they financially can't sustain themselves. So charters are extremely accountable to what the citizenry want in schools. And what we have in the traditional system is a system that's less accountable, and we've continued to spend money in schools that are dramatically under-enrolled, which takes money away from paying teachers and takes money away from doing the things the families really need.
Back in 2016, Pennsylvania Auditor General called the charter law the worst in the country. Just picking up on that, I'm curious what you say back to Mark, making a case for charters. Is there a place for charters?
Sure. I am not arguing against charters. I think what Mark talked about in terms of accountability is really important. In fact, what we know is that, I'm just going to get the number, that I think it's 17 states have updated their charter law since we passed ours in 2001. And look, when that law was written, it was brand new to do charters, and we weren't really clear. And I'm not sure that I agree with Mark about what drove the creation of charters. There was an awful lot of discussion about busting the teachers union as a real basis for which we were creating charters, although ironically now lots of charters have their own teachers union. But the fact is that many states have updated their laws since we passed ours, and they have in it bright line information that says that it's 19 states say if you're an underperforming charter, you close. Ours is silent. So when the Philadelphia School District has closed charters on performance, they've actually had to find a financial malfeasance, an enrollment, a special ed, a fraud issue, because the law is not clear enough in Pennsylvania. And I think Mark and I totally agree that the Pennsylvania law ought to have very clear performance standards for charters, and people should be held to that so that we have great charters. I think we need great charters available to children. I think the theory that they will create competition for the public schools is true if they're good. Most of our charters in Philly perform at or worse than the Philly district. So there's not enough tension to drive up the performance anywhere. So if the theory was competition will improve things, we don't have a law that supports that.
But let me just follow up. For an underperforming public schools, what is the remedy for that under the current system?
Well, look, the remedy is much weaker because the public schools are the schools of last resort. Charters, if they close, the kids have to go to the public school. Also, if a kid is in a charter and it doesn't meet their needs, either because of special ed or curricula or the way it's working, they go back to the public schools. So it's a more complicated situation because a public school cannot reject any student and they must take students. We have an accountability system in Philly. We are trying across the state to improve performance through accountability systems. And I think we need stronger accountability systems for public schools to drive their performance up. But it's crazy to hold either the Philly charters or the Philly publics to a standard of Lower Merion's performance at half of the resources. So we have to align our conversation of accountability and resources in a rational way, or what we do is we harm the poorest children. And that's what's happening here.
Mark, are charter schools public schools?
They are publicly funded.
They're publicly funded.
And they are open to anybody. In fact, most charter schools enroll by lottery. So a wealthy person has just as much opportunity to get into a school as a less wealthy person, or a white person versus a non-white person. They are privately managed. They are not managed by a public bureaucracy, so to speak. But they are accountable to that bureaucracy. In Pennsylvania, charter schools are authorized by the local board of education. So in our case, the Philadelphia Board of Education ultimately is the arbiter of who gets a charter or who gets their charter revoked.
Let me just quickly reintroduce him. We got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. That's Mark Gleason. He's executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Also with us, Donna Cooper, here in our Philadelphia studios, is executive director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. We are talking about school choice, an issue that got reignited with the President's State of the Union address. Let me just read a couple of comments, and then we'll get Colleen from Philadelphia to join us. A Facebook comment from Francesca: I can't fault this mother. This would be Janiyah's mother, for doing what she thinks she needs to do, but it makes me ill how they are being used. Children shouldn't have to pray for someone rich to give them money so that they can get an education. Facebook comment from Lisa: I'm grateful for the wonderful choice for my daughter to attend a cyber charter. That said, I was also a lifelong student at some wonderful public schools. The attack on public education is horrible. Let me get Colleen from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Colleen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My son attends Philadelphia public schools, and we're really pleased with his school and his education. And we've chosen a traditional public school. What irks me about this debate is that the charter advocates don't seem to recognize that I am choosing a public school for my son, but my choice is actually being undermined because of the charter school payment system that mandates that our school district send charters a set amount of funds for special ed students, regardless of how many charters are actually spending on special ed, how much they're spending, excuse me.
Sure. Well,
and that impacts my son. So I want to ask Mark Gleason why he thinks my choice isn't as valuable as a parent who chooses a charter school. Specifically, if the district is receiving about $15,000 for a special ed kid with low incidence needs, how can he justify a $29,000 payment for that same sort of child at a charter, especially when that higher payment is taking money from my son's education?
Well, Colleen, I appreciate the call, and I know Mark wants to respond. Go ahead.
Sunday's Inquirer had a story about Greenfield Elementary, which is the neighborhood public school in Philadelphia in the Rittenhouse Square neighborhood. It's one of the best schools in the city by the traditional metrics. 6 or 7 years ago, that school was mostly a school of choice for families who didn't live in Rittenhouse because that school was not full. There weren't enough families living in Rittenhouse. And so families from other neighborhoods would opt into that school via transfer. 60% of the students at Greenfield at that time were low income. Today, more families have decided to live in the Rittenhouse neighborhood. The school is now full. Almost all the students in the school come from the catchment. Only 20% of the students are low income. The challenge with the traditional public system is that it assigns students to schools based on where they live. Mm-hmm. Boundaries help people stay in, but they also keep people out. And so are we saying that we want a system where the families who can afford to live in a Rittenhouse get to gobble up all the seats in the best school, and you other families are on your own? Tough luck to you. We hope your school one day will be as good as ours. Is that the system where we want to promulgate.
But I think what Colleen was saying is that the way charters are funded, that the money follows the student, and that robs what she says, her school, of the money that is needed to educate children there. Let me just give Donna a quick chance to respond to that.
You know, this is an age-old debate where, you know, 7 years ago, thanks to, you know, I really appreciate Colleen raising that, and she's a very astute public school parent. I mean, 7 years ago, the state created a new special ed payment formula. Bipartisan commission, actually, you know, Pat Brown, the Senate Republican Appropriations Chair, Bernie O'Neill, long-serving House Republican member, were the co-chairs. And, you know, basically they established a better payment system for special ed. And it basically said, look, if your kid doesn't need that much, we're going to pay about $15,000, mm-hmm. and we're going to pay about $40,000 for kids who need more. And then we have this special fund for kids who are super expensive. And by the way, we underfund special ed in Pennsylvania. Totally.
Compared to other states?
No, all across the country there's a problem. And yeah, compared to other states. But in 13 other states, the process by which public schools are paid for special ed is the same by which charter schools are paid for special ed. But high-paid lobbyists 7 years ago said, well, that payment system sounds really good for public schools, but charters want to be paid $29,000 for every kid like we always were. Hmm. And so they have 93% of these kids who don't have high special needs. And they're getting paid $11,000 more for each of those children than the district's receiving. And so the district has to pay that, which means it's coming out of all their other money, whether it's their special ed money or their basic ed money. So we have these special interests that are protecting a minority of students that are distorting the resources that should be available in every school, Mark, not just Greenfield, every school.
Go ahead, and then I want to play something from Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, but go ahead, Mark.
As Donna will recall, I agree that the current system needs to be reformed. What we're doing is unsustainable, but we're also totally mischaracterizing it. The state reimburses the school district here only about $4,500 for every special ed student, not $15,000. The school district spends, on average, on their entire population of special education students, $29,000 per student. That's what drives the charter reimbursement number. The challenge is most of the money they're using to do that with is coming from they're basically borrowing from their local taxpayer funds that aren't restricted to special ed, but they have to spend it on special ed, and then that drives the charter funding formula. So there's a lot of misdirection in this debate. The reality is, yes, we need to fix this formula. It's got some tweaks in it that are creating sort of a multiplying effect of imbalance, but it's not the imbalance that we're talking about. It's not 15,000 versus 29,000. That's just a misdirection.
Let me play a clip from, and this is an edited clip of Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf laying out an educator-related budget proposal. This was Tuesday during his 2020 budget address, and again, we edited some clips together.
This year, I'm calling for the expansion of universal, no-cost, full-day kindergarten so that it's available for every child in our Commonwealth. I'm asking all of you to work together to make universal, full-day kindergarten a reality. This year, I'm calling for $435 million in new investments, starting with $100 million increase in the FAIR funding formula, an additional $25 million increase in funding for special education, and a $30 million increase for high-quality early childhood education. And there's an important role for charter schools to play in offering parents choice and providing a source of competition and innovation that can benefit all students, no matter what school they attend. But as you know, too many charter schools here in the Commonwealth have strayed from that purpose. Some are a little more than fronts for private management companies, and the only innovations they're coming up with involve finding new ways to take money out of the pockets of property taxpayers.
Donna, can you respond to what the governor just said there, especially about fronts and charter schools?
Well, something unique in Pennsylvania is that we permit charter operators who contract out the operation of their charter school to a charter management company to protect that charter management company from public disclosure records. And this is obviously the case in Chester Upland, long reported by the Philadelphia Inquirer. You've had conversations about that. So we are one of the few states where there's no transparency in the fact that there are private companies who are extracting nearly all of the funds that are paid to that charter operating that school without requirements of any transparency on how much the for-profit company is earning in the delivery of a public education with our tax dollars. That doesn't happen in states with more up-to-date charter laws and with reasonable charter laws. And it shouldn't happen here. And no taxpayer should accept the possibility that tens of millions of dollars are being spent without transparency.
Go ahead, Mark.
The charter sector, many of the school leaders in Philadelphia and across the Commonwealth worked very hard in 2019 to pass a package of bills that would have been reform bills. They would have been, you could almost call them self-policing bills. There was increased transparency and ethics requirements for charter schools. There was a proposed roughly 10% cut in the funding that goes to cyber charter schools because they don't have brick and mortar expenses to deal with. There was creating a level playing field for charter schools so they can offer dual enrollment college courses on the same grounds as traditional public schools are allowed to now. This package got through the House, but in November it came close to getting through the Senate, and we thought maybe getting a signature from the governor. But ultimately, for reasons I wasn't in the room when it fell apart, that bill did not get passed. But the charter sector would agree that, you know, the number of schools that have these for-profit fronts is very small as a percentage of the total. And, you know, some of the practices are bad for the sector. That's a fair statement.
But would it be, we're almost having a break here, but if it came to a grinding halt in the Senate, was it the Republicans? I mean, they control the legislature in Harrisburg.
It's very hard to get bills passed in Harrisburg. I think there's both intra-party and cross-party challenges when you're trying to pass legislation that's got a lot of moving parts to it.
Well, hold on to that, though, okay. Only because we're up on a break here. Otherwise, I have to jump all over you. That is Mark Gleason, Executive Director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Also with us, Donna Cooper, Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. We're talking about education in the state of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, talking about charter schools and public schools and choice and scholarships. And you can join our conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and call us, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Mark Gleason and Donna Cooper about the Trump administration's efforts at expanding school choice, including things like scholarships and charters, and what it could mean for public schools in Pennsylvania and beyond. Joining us is David Hardy, and he is head of an organization called Excellent Schools PA. And David, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Listen, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have something called the Housing Choice Voucher, where low-income families can use this voucher to get private housing. They don't have to go to a public housing unit. They can use that for rent in any place where people are renting a property. And I haven't heard any protests about that. I haven't heard anybody complain about, you know, transparency and all the things you hear about an educational voucher, which is the same thing. And the other part of this is that we have people who are operating in an environment where they act like everything is going to work if the public schools had more money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that there's a lot of evidence of that. And when you talk about transparency and accountability in Philadelphia public education, my only response is asbestos. Okay.
Yes, and
you know how that works.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there are a lot of public schools that have toxic problems. The Inquirer, HYY, has covered that as well. David, I know you have more to say. I just want to give Don a chance to respond to your initial comment. And David also, according to my screen here, says that racial disparities in public schools and that Black and Latino parents want their children to go to charter schools, but take the money
so,
part
first. First of all, on the housing voucher part, housing vouchers are highly regulated, highly transparent. Landlords are controlled on what they can charge. and we are adding to the private housing market through them. So housing predated, you know, like we had a private housing market. We have a public education system. So it's not a material comparison. I suggest you drop that one, David. Find a new one. On the question about the
parents of color or
parents of color. Sure. Look, I think that we are doing a disservice to parents in our charters and our public schools in Philadelphia. None of them are performing well enough for our parents of color. Parents who go to independent school tell me that the children of color there are not doing as well as their white peers in a really good charter school. I know I look at the data. $98 million in charter payments were paid to charters where one in four kids are passing their reading assessments. So look, let's be clear. There's no reason to have this war. If we were adequately funding our schools, I think, David, there is legions of research. Mm-hmm. There are 23 state lawsuits that have confirmed that research that say without adequate resources, you cannot get the results you want.
Fair. I know there's more to say, David, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Mark, looks like you want to add something.
Well, I agree with Donna. Like, this charter, this choice debate is a distraction. Like, 65% of all the students in this city are in schools of choice. Let's stop debating about that, and let's make sure they have good choices to pick from. You know, there are some nuances. Donna has referenced a couple times that charter schools don't do any better. That's actually not true. Stanford University's research shows that in Philadelphia, particularly for low-income and minority students, charter schools do better in reading in Philadelphia. They don't do better in math. They're mm-hmm. about the same in math, which is we're not good in math in Philadelphia, period. We got to fix that. We also have huge demand for these charter schools. Huge. I mean, we had 34,000 students apply through the standard application, Apply Philly Charter, this year that PSP manages for the charter sector. And there are only about 7,500 seats available. That ratio shows that we're not doing enough to meet the needs of these families. And I don't think the solution is necessarily let's just do all charter schools. We need to make all of our schools better. We need to support what's happening in our traditional schools. We need to support what's happening in charter schools. And we got to remember that the private schools are adding value here too. They have 10% of the students, and the amount of money we're giving them through these tax credits is less than $1,000 per student. If those students were to roll back into our system at $15,000 per student, the system would go broke. So those schools are adding a value to this ecosystem, and we can't forget that either.
Well, Donna, one of the critiques I've read about school choice is that it's the schools that make the choice more than the parents because there are a limited number of seats. So whereas in a public school, they essentially have to accept all children. In a charter school, there are a limited number of seats. And so the school decides more than the family. Or
well, I would say in Philly, for the most part, we have a lottery system. We do have some sibling preferences, and we have some, you know, a way to attract families by the nature of the school, you know, and the location. So where Mast is, they're going to attract certain families. So there is some kind of cherry picking by the nature of location, the way you promote yourself, what you look like when you promote yourself, and sibling preference. But by and large, we have a lottery system that's intended to compensate for that. And I would say PCCY has done a great job removing barriers so that families of every race and every class can have equal access to charters. Their outreach may not exactly enable that. Mm. But I think that the real question is that parents don't necessarily know if the charter they're going to is high quality or not. The information's available. But, you know, if you're going to a charter where, you know, less than a quarter of the kids are reading on grade level, you're thinking my kid's not going to be one of those. But it's not a good environment for your kid. And I want to go back to something Dave Hardy said about asbestos. Half of the charters never complied with the lead regulations that required them to test their water fountains. So I have no idea what the asbestos situation is in the charters. It's just an unexplored area. So be careful what you ask for, David.
Fair enough. David Hardy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read some more comments. One from Louise. They're pushing to privatize everything. They, I guess, meaning the Trump administration, wants to hang a price tag on every aspect of our lives. And they try to scare people that it's the evil government coming after them that's the problem. A comment from Karen. And why can't parents get vouchers for the cost of public education to spend on whatever school they choose? I mean, in certain ways, that's the heart of school choice. An email from Carl. The Pennsylvania public school system works for the wealthy districts and those families who can afford to live in them. We live in Lower Merion and we choose to send our children to private schools because of the lack of social, cultural, and economic diversity in the public schools. Just to sort of add an interesting wrinkle to our conversation, let me get Beth from Philadelphia to join us. And Beth, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So my comment is directed primarily at Mr. Gleason, which is that I actually, for once, agree with you that we need to get rid of this notion of choice, because for parents who have children with significant special education needs, charter schools aren't particularly a choice because you don't have to educate the children with the most significant of those needs. For parents whose first language is not English, charter schools aren't necessarily a choice because, as Ms. Cooper indicated, you don't do the necessary outreach. And so those children go to their neighborhood schools. And when money is continually siphoned away from those schools, then those schools are not vibrant enough as they need to be for those children. So I would like to know how you address that.
Sure. Fair enough, Beth. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Mark Gleason, go ahead.
The data shows money's not the issue. The district, the school district here actually has in recent years changed their budgeting process. So they're directing more and more money to the schools where they have the neediest students. But nevertheless, families are pursuing, we can argue about whether they're pursuing the right things, but they are pursuing a perception of school quality. And we see this. The school district publishes data on all the catchment schools in Philadelphia, and they publish how many of the students who live in the catchment zone are enrolled in that local school and how many are opting out into some other school, be it a charter or some other option. And the data clearly show that in the schools that are high achieving on the standardized tests and other metrics, the opt-out rate is very low.
Mm-hmm.
And in the schools that are really struggling, in North Philly and some other neighborhoods, lower Northeast Philly, the opt-out rate is very high. And then if you look at, and here's the kicker, if you flip that, and they also publish the data for, in a school, where are the students coming from? What catchments are they coming from? What you find is that in the best schools in the city, most of the families opting into those schools don't actually live in the neighborhood. They're opting in. Choice exists. Families are pursuing a perception of quality, and what we have is an inequitable system that allows families of privilege to have more access to the most desirable schools. Charters are a strategy to undercut that and create more equity. It doesn't always work. Every policy has trade-offs. It never works. Nothing works perfectly for every family, but we're trying to get to some system that on whole is more equitable.
So the question, Donna, is do charters make all schools more equitable, or does it in a sense, drive a wedge between good schools and bad schools?
Well, if we had a different funding system for charters, you could perhaps buy into Mark's argument. But at this point, we have two issues that are for real in as it relates to funding charters. One is the stranded cost. If eight kids leave a school to go to a charter, it's not like they can get rid of a teacher. So you still have the cost of operating that school, but the money has to follow the kid. So because of Pennsylvania's approach to funding schools, the only way that you end up with charter growth is at the expense of the remaining children in public schools until you get to an economy scale where you can close an entire school, thus the 26 schools that have been closed. But that takes a really long time. And in the meantime, all those children are injured that are left in that public school that's under-resourced, number one. Number two, the way that we fund the charters right now advantages them in certain ways so that the district has to pay them at higher levels than it's able to spend on its own students. And that needs to be rectified. Beyond that, we haven't even raised the issue of cybers and the impact of cyber students on the district who were children perhaps who were never attending the Philadelphia school, who now we're paying for, even though we have no additional reimbursement for them. So if we were going to go down Mark's path and say, we need a really robust choice system, well, we need a financing system that enables that so no child's education is subjugated to another in the interest of choice.
Let me get Shirley in on the conversation. She has a question about or a comment about fair funding for all schools. And Shirley, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks so much.
Sure.
I'm lucky because my kids attend Lower Merion schools. I can afford to live in this community, but I don't live with blinders on. I live three blocks from City Avenue. Philadelphia public schools are literally across the street. And the reason that schools educating the poorest students in our state, both charters and public schools, are underperforming, not because there are too few charter options, but because the state isn't doing what's required by our Constitution, which is to fund all of our schools. So I guess my question is, why not push for the state to fund our schools properly so that charter schools and traditional public schools are all funded at reasonable levels?
It seems like such a basic question, but we have talked a lot about this during the hour, Mark. Go ahead.
I agree. The state should do more to equalize funding between wealthy districts and poor districts. It's a challenge in Pennsylvania. It's one we only partially addressed in the funding formula that became law in 2016, and we could go further.
You know, I've lost count of over the decades that I've been doing the show how many shows we have done about education and about disparities and about funding and about teachers, I mean, on and on, probably hundreds, maybe several hundred at this point. And Donna, I just have to, it sort of reminds me of our healthcare system. It seems we have the worst of all worlds. It's complicated. It creates disparities and unfairness. And in too many cases, it doesn't do the job.
Well, and what's really interesting,
whether it's public or charter or cyber or whatever.
Of course. But one of the things that's happened in Pennsylvania is, I think very tragically, is that some special interests have really hijacked the education debate. So we have very well-paid public information campaigns that are really, really attacking Tom Wolf for what he's proposed. There are thousands of parents who go to charters who end up in the Capitol steps and demand, you know, no change to the charter law, and scholarship parents come. And people are paying for that advocacy work. It doesn't happen. Look, 1.7 million kids are in public school. Their parents would be there if there were the advocacy resources for them to stand up and say, I want to protect what's good for my kid. And unfortunately, because of how elections are funded in Pennsylvania, if you ask me, this really comes down to the fact that anybody can give as much money as they want to anybody running for the legislature. And it's not that the legislature's corrupt, but money really amplifies your voice. And I think that we need to think about how in the parents who go to public schools, traditional public schools, need to think about how they amplify their voice and invest in ways to really make their voice heard as well, so that there's a can create a unified message with the charters that have integrity and want to stand up for good schools and work together for more resources.
I mean, I think, Mark, we're almost out of time here. It's about the individual, about us caring about for our own children and also the common good, and whether choice really addresses both those important issues.
Charter schools are not the boogeyman here. The before charter schools ever existed 22 years ago, there was a huge disparity in academic outcomes for white and minority students in Philadelphia. We still have a big gap, but that gap has gotten smaller. So charter schools have not made the overall situation worse. And the money problems that are really affecting schools, they are real. Charters are a small piece of that. The exploding cost of special education and the decision in Pennsylvania to underfund our teachers' pension system for about a decade are the primary drivers of the funding crisis. Charters are being made to be the boogeyman for mistakes in judgment that we made as a Commonwealth over decades. And I get that it's uncomfortable, and I get that this system has side effects that creates pain in other places. But at the end of the day, charters are trying to create a more level playing field so all families have access to good schools. That's a well-intended policy. Does it need to be tweaked and fixed around the corners? Absolutely. And the charter sector wants to be part of that discussion.
Well, we could go on. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Mark Gleason, thanks for coming in.
And thank you.
You're welcome. Executive Director of the Philadelphia School Partnership, Donna Cooper, thank you for joining us as well. And she is Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. We can carry on this conversation on our Facebook page. Lots of people that wanted to join us. Also, make sure if you didn't hear all of this hour that you download a podcast of the show, and you can get a podcast wherever you get your other podcasts. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.